Welcome to episode 451 of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode I'll cover a topic I've been wanting to discuss for quite a while, which is how to improve the way you set yourself target intensities in different types of workouts beyond simply using percentages of threshold, which is probably the method that most listeners, both athletes and coaches, might be using as the, let's say, standard method. For a lot of experienced athletes, especially if you have reached some kind of plateau or stagnation point, this could be something that helps you break through that plateau and develop further if you get your intensities a little bit more optimized and individualized. For athletes that are more towards the beginning stages of their career, this is a bit more of a marginal gain and not something that you should worry about necessarily. But it's still quite important to understand that percentages of threshold is a simple model that works well on average, but there may come a stage when you'll want to move beyond that. And when that happens, you can return to this episode and start implementing some of the action points that we will discuss here. So that is an outline or a description of what we will discuss today. But before we do that, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. As you know, they create carbohydrate products like gels, drink mix, and chews, and electrolytes, and all of these products are effective, practical, and tasty. They are designed to make it easy for you from every standpoint to execute your nutrition and hydration plan in a race, but also they help you create and come up with that strategy in the first place through their educational resources, from their free fuel hydration planner, their free consultations, their database of case studies, and their amazing blog articles. Especially, I recommend you check out the Staff Picks articles that are the fundamental pieces of education, I would say, that that you should look into if you're curious about learning more about hydration and nutrition. As a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order by using the code TTS24 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the main topic of today's episode. So let's start with discussing the method that I think, as I said at the beginning of this episode, is probably the most popular one today among triathletes, and that is to base your intensities off of a percentage of threshold. Usually that would be a power threshold or pace threshold. So for example, on the bike, you might have a functional threshold power or an FTP of 300 watts, and you use a percentage, for example, 90% of that for specific workouts. So 90% would be 270 watts, and you could consider those your sweet spot intervals. Or another example, you could say that you're using 120% of your FTP to train your to do your VO2 max intervals. The same principle applies to running, although the percentages used would be different than in cycling, because in running, and we're talking pace here rather than power, the functional range of speeds, but it would the same would actually apply to power as well. Just the functional range of speeds and powers is much narrower than in cycling. And in swimming, I think that most people don't actually use percentages of threshold, but more commonly, some people would use threshold plus or minus X seconds per 100 meters or yards. So this means that it is still based on a fixed number, which is your threshold as a pace per 100 meters or yards. But the method to get to the different intensity targets is a bit different because you're adding or subtracting time rather than taking a percentage. But I'll mostly use cycling and running in the discussion going forward. I'll touch a bit on swimming in the end because I think that swimming is a bit different. And so most of what we'll discuss here applies to cycling and running, I would say, more so than swimming. But let's discuss first the benefits of using this classic method of using percentage of threshold to prescribe workouts and decide on target intensities. First of all, for most events that listeners of this podcast race, from 5K runs to Ironmans, and maybe even some ultras beyond Ironman, your second threshold, which I will simply call threshold going forward because that is kind of the colloquial term, that is a better predictor of performance than your VO2 max in endurance events of this distance from 5K and above. So it's a positive that we anchor intensities to threshold rather than to VO2 max. However, for certain events like, let's say, a 1500 meter race on the track or an individual pursuit or a 400 free in the pool, for those types of events, VO2 max would be more important. So for those events, it would actually make more sense to anchor your training percentages to VO2 max rather than to threshold. You could argue that for ultra endurance, which is 7.3 and beyond, technically speaking, as long as you do 7.3 in 4 hours or slower, that would be considered ultra endurance. It might make more sense to anchor intensities to LT1, so the first threshold rather than the second threshold. That being said, I think that the second threshold is a good compromise that kind of works for a large range of goal events and athlete profiles, as it is somewhere in the middle. So that's a big positive. It's widely applicable. It's broad. A second benefit is that by using percentages of this threshold, we are scaling things in a relative way, which makes more sense than the swimming method that I described before about potentially adding or subtracting a number of seconds. For example, if we take a cycling example, for somebody with an FTP of 175 watts, doing intervals at 160 watts would be mean doing intervals at 91% of threshold power. And for most people, that would be a pretty good intensity to do so-called sweet spot intervals, which physiologically speaking simply means extensive threshold intervals, but we'll use the colloquial nomenclature of sweet spot. And to contrast that, for a cyclist with an FTP of 450 watts, doing intervals at minus 15 watts, so that is the same scenario we had in terms of the difference to threshold, they would be doing intervals at 435 watts, or so again, 15 watts below FTP, as in the previous example. But that would be a much harder effort physiologically and psychologically. And we see that when we look at the percentages, that would be mean doing intervals at 97% of threshold. And so basically that is threshold. Threshold is a range, it's not a number. So you are right at threshold rather than just below. By using percentages, in other words, we can scale for relative intensity. This is not rocket science. This is not news to anybody, I'm sure. But we can compare vastly different performance level, and this is really the only way that we can formulate intensity prescription to these wide differences of level or performance level. That's not to say that 90% is always the same as 90%, no matter what performance level we're talking about. But as a general model for training prescription and for as a communication tool as well, it works pretty well, if not very well, for the most part. Naturally, the further you are from your potential, the more margin for error you have, and the less precise you need to be with these sort of things to still have a positive effect. Potential here, by the way, is a combination of genetic potential, but also time available for training. So the more time restricted you are, the closer you can be to your realistic potential, even if that is not the same as your genetic potential, but your actual real-life potential is a combination of both genetic potential but also time available for training. So to summarize, the benefits of this classic method of basing intensities off of a percentage of threshold is that, one, we can describe and prescribe workouts that sort of mean the same thing to almost everybody, no matter what the performance level. So if you have an FTP of 175 watts, you can still understand the training done by somebody with an FTP of 450 watts, it is still relatable to workouts at your level. Number two, for the typical athlete who is not close to their realistic potential, it will generally work well or even very well to utilize this classic approach. And number three, it is a simple method. Simple is good in many, many ways. We always, of course, need to be careful not to oversimplify, but we also should not overcomplicate. So this type of system has meant that it's almost like a democratization of information, where at least in cycling and triathlon, I feel like lots of self-coach athletes have a pretty good grasp of what different percentages of threshold mean, even to the degree of being able to understand the normal physiology underlying different percentages of threshold, which is a great thing. So definitely, I think that the masses of participants in these sports, in cycling and triathlon, have a good level of understanding of how to use this kind of system and methodology. What about the disadvantages then? So as you probably noticed, I've used terms like the typical athlete or on average or usually and so on and so forth. So this classic system doesn't necessarily work well or work at all when we get closer to the edges of the normal distributions of things like performance level and also physiological profile. For example, for a world-class cyclist looking for a needle in a haystack to move their performance level, prescribing workouts based on percentage of threshold would probably not give the ideal level of precision to give them the best chance of improving when they're already very close to their genetic potential. On the opposite end of the spectrum, though, the classic method of prescription could also break down for athletes with really low threshold powers or paces, because you get a false sense of differentiating between different types of workouts when 90% and 80% of threshold might actually be 10 watts difference, which physiologically would be almost not a difference at all for this type of athlete. So there you might also need to individualize, but individualization would be a bit different. It would be more about simplifying rather than looking for more precision. So that would be a slightly different case. However, it still comes back to the same thing, that this is a scenario where maybe the classic percentages of threshold is a model that is not optimal. So the other scenario that we have is edge cases of physiology. And here I'm mostly talking about your profile in terms of, are you more on the fast twitch end of the spectrum or slow twitch end of the spectrum? If you are an athlete with a very strong glycolytic contribution to your energy production, so in other words, you are a fast twitch profile, then the conventional wisdom of prescribing workouts based on percentage of threshold could easily lead to overtraining. Or I guess to clarify, the percentages could still work in general, but those percentages would need to be very different percentages than for the average endurance athlete. So what is 90% for the average endurance athlete might need to be 80% for you to have the same physiological effect. This is to a lesser extent also, well, the opposite scenario, but equally important for very, very slow twitch dominant athletes that don't have any trace of glycolytic capacity. I say to a lesser extent only because it is typically much harder for slow twitch profiles to overtrain. So the risk of catastrophic consequences is lower, but the risk of the training not being effective is not too different at this extreme from the other extreme. So just as we have the edge cases of performance level, the edge cases of physiology are also situations where looking at individualizing intensity targets would be important, and the classic model is maybe not the most optimal. Another disadvantage of the classic model is that even if it is generally good or very good even, at a certain point you might just get stuck in your development and see limited progress, especially if you're time crunched. If you have all the time in the world to train and you don't fall on the outer edges of the normal distribution for performance or physiological profile, then even if you're training at an intensity that could be further optimized, it's probably more than good enough that you can keep improving with a classic model. But the less volume you do, the more you have to maximize what you get out of every single session that you do. And for that, getting the intensities of your key workouts right is very important. Basically, the classic system might not allow you to maximize the training stimulus of your key workouts, and you're at a point when you need to maximize that stimulus of those workouts to keep improving because you're time limited, essentially. This typically becomes the case when you're already an experienced athlete with many years of consistent training in your body and you are maxed out on the time that you have available to train. So let's, at this point, summarize here. For whom does it make sense to maybe move beyond the classic model of using percentages of threshold for target intensities? It's not for everybody, like I said. I think a lot of athletes don't need to worry about that because the classic model is equally good because they are not part of any of these groups that we'll talk about here. But the ones that I think stand to benefit quite or potentially quite significantly are, number one, athletes that are at the edge cases of performance, so either very high or very low thresholds and performance levels. Number two would be edge cases of physiological profiles, so athletes that fall close to the extremes on the fast twitch to slow twitch spectrum. And number three would be athletes that have plateaued in their development, they are time limited, and they are seemingly doing most things correctly, so you're sleeping well, eating well, their training is structured in a good way and executed well, so there are no obvious errors to correct, but yet there is that plateau and you cannot just, there is no more time for you to train. That is group number three. And if you recognize yourself in one of these groups, then the benefits that you could expect to, or at least hope to see from moving beyond the classic model of percentage of threshold-based intensities would be, number one, you would hopefully become more consistent with your key workouts by not overdoing it, but also not underdoing it. Obviously, usually you'd want to be somewhere in the middle between the two, where you push hard, but only so hard that 2 to 3 days later, you could do the same thing again, or even do it again with some kind of progression. And the second benefit would be less need of formal testing. Basically, when you learn to use this methodology that I will describe, then that allows you to effectively just look at a bunch of training and racing data and decide on your optimal training intensities from that data, even in the absence of any kind of formal testing. That doesn't mean that formal testing isn't a good thing and very useful from time to time, but you might not be as reliant on it as you were before. So I would argue that it gives you a better foundation to plan from also than just using a test as a snapshot in time as the be-all, end-all, because tests can still be part of how you decide on your target intensities, and they become a part of it if you do tests, but they would not be the be-all and end-all because that would not be as representative as months or and even years. Well, more months of training and racing data, or 1 year of training and racing data is usually what we would look at. But that is a potential benefit that you won't feel the need to have to retest and retest every 8 to 10 weeks or 8 to 12 weeks, however often you normally test. You could potentially start to test less often and testing would still be useful, but you would not be reliant on it. Now, let's move on to the methodology itself, and that starts with establishing a performance profile. What do I mean by performance profile? In simple terms, it could be your power duration curve or your speed duration curve, and usually we would look at that on a 365-day basis, so looking up to 1 year back in time, and that is your performance profile. So a power duration curve. That's in simple terms. I will get to some modifications to this definition in just a little bit, but super briefly, for those who may not be familiar, your power duration curve, it shows your maximum power output for every duration from 1 second to many, many hours, however long your longest ride was. And the speed duration curve is the same thing, but for your maximum speed in running or swimming rather than your maximum power for every duration. For example, if in the last 365 days, your best power for 1 second was 1,000 watts, and for 5 minutes, it was 300 watts, and for 3 hours, it was 200 watts, then those are all points on your power duration curve. But all durations in between will each have a so-called mean max power associated to it. So the result is a smooth, gradually declining curve that declines the most in the early stages. See, the decline is the most steep for very short durations. And then on the far right, for longer durations, it declines very gradually. I'll try to remember to put a chart, a figure showing a power duration curve in the show notes. So you can find it on scientifictriathlon.com/TTS451. And then you can maybe visualize it more easily when you actually, well, then you will be able to see an actual figure showing a power duration curve. So that is the power duration curve. However, the performance profile, the way I see it, is not the same as the power duration curve, even though it's related. I like to look at the top 3 to top 5 best mean max powers for a few specific durations. Remember, the power duration curve just looks at the top 1. So the 1 best power output or speed output that you've done for every single duration that you have actually trained or raced at, from 1 second to potentially many, many hours. Usually the durations that I'm interested at would be 5 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, and then the duration of key race distances. So for example, if you focus on the Sanyo 3 distance and you complete the bike leg in around about 3 hours for the Sanyo 3, then looking at the 3-hour mean max power for the bike component would be a key performance marker obviously for the run, it would be dependent on how quick your run is, and we'll get to that in a bit. But when we look at the 5 minute power or 5 minute speed output, for example, then that is a great proxy for the final stage that you would complete in an incremental exercise test, which is the so-called maximum aerobic power or maximum aerobic speed. More importantly, though, it is a great target intensity for many different types of interval workouts focused on improving VO2 max. And by looking at the top three to top five rather than just the top one, the advantage is that we can see how stable and reliable this data is. Do we have multiple data points that are kind of close to that maximum, or do we have one big outlier and then the second to fifth best power outputs are way below? In that case, we'd better go and verify that that top number is actually valid and not some kind of measurement error or outlier based on some different type of context. Also, if that top performance happened maybe almost 365 days ago, and the other four happened recently, and you know that you were in better shape then than you are now, then looking at the more recent top performances might be the more useful and more relevant approach. So as you can see here, there's a lot of analysis, a lot of thinking, there's a lot of art and experience going into it rather than hard science. This is not about putting inputs into a formula and getting outputs through that formula. You can still potentially keep your best mean max power, the one that shows on your power duration curve, as the number you focus on for your 5 minute power performance profile, for example. But you shouldn't automatically do that. That is the point. That is why I think it's important to look beyond that one best output at this point in your analysis before deciding what number you pick as your representative 5 minute mean max power. Basically, it's all about considering context. Maybe you do all of your training indoors normally, but then you went to a training camp, perhaps one in Mallorca in April, scientifictriathlon.com/Mallorca, hint, hint. And there you set a big 5 minute PB on one of the climbs. Then, of course, this mean max power is real and valid, but it's maybe not relevant for your regular indoor training intensities if you cannot quite hit the same power numbers indoors as you do outdoors. So that means that you might need to focus on the second to fifth best mean max powers rather than that one best outlier. So again, context is king. That's what I'm the main takeaway here. Similar to how the 5 minute mean max power or mean max speed are great data points to use for VO2 max workouts, the 30 and 60 minute mean max powers and mean max speeds are great data points to use when prescribing threshold intensities. So normally the power or pace that you can hold for 30 minutes would correspond more to your critical power or critical speed, so let's say the upper end of your threshold range, and the 60 minute peak performances would be more similar to your lactate threshold 2, your LT2, or your MLSS, the maximum lactate steady state. So they would be more on the, let's say, lower end of the threshold range, and I find it very useful to look at both, and this way you can really get a picture for in that range as a whole and not view threshold as a single number, which it isn't really or at all. So I think that this is a very useful thing and an important takeaway from this episode, probably to help you look at threshold in a different way. Then the durations for race performances would of course be very important for your race specific training. And also, not only that, but it would be a good reality check for goal setting even. So if you plan to do a 4.5 hour Ironman bike leg pushing 250 watts, but then you go and look at your data and you see that the most you've ever done for 4.5 hours is 200 watts, then at the very least, it's an indicator that you may need to do a benchmark training session of some kind to assess whether there's any chance that you can get to that 250 watt target by the time of your goal race, or if you need to adjust that goal a bit. So in the end, what you're left with after this analysis is a, let's call it a simplified and adjusted power duration curve or speed duration curve, where you're basically just looking at discrete data points. And sometimes you take maybe an average of the top five, or you pick the second or third or fourth best, or you pick the best. You're doing this all based on context and analysis, based on the art of coaching and your own experience, so that you're left with mean max powers or mean max speeds for a few key durations, and you can choose these for yourself. They don't have to be the same as mine, but I go with 5 minutes, 30 and 60 minutes, and 1 to 2 longer durations based on your goal race durations. And this is the performance profile that you will use to set your individualized intensity targets. There are some very important limitations of this performance profile that we need to discuss. First of all, if you haven't done near maximal efforts over various durations, then you're not going to get an accurate profile. So you need to know whether you have done that or not. And I don't think it has to be absolutely maximal. I think near maximal is perfectly fine, as the difference in power or pace between maximal and near maximal is usually very small. In very simple terms, if you race, in particular, if you race over various different distances, and this can include not just triathlons, but running races, bike races, including swift races or similar. And also if you sometimes train really hard, whether on your own or in a group, and it doesn't have to mean throwing up hard, but basically this was a 9 out of 10 session RPE hard, then you probably have a very good database that you can use for constructing your profile. It doesn't have to be anything special, but yeah, you need to go hard a few times over different durations to be able to do this. And this is actually a great reason to mention something that I've said before on the podcast, that doing not just your longer 7.3 and Ironman races, your marathons, all of that, but also doing shorter races, sprint and Olympic distance triathlons, 5Ks, 10Ks, swift races, etc., that is a very good thing that will benefit your main race distance for various reasons. But one of them is that you get a much clearer view of your performance profile when you have those races. Another limitation of this methodology or the performance profile is that due to the nature of our sport and how to train for it, how we typically train for it, is that it's much more rare to have representative mean max speeds for running across a range of durations compared to having mean max powers for cycling. So for running, and this is obviously because we typically, unless we race half marathons and marathons, our maximum duration runs might be limited to doing one 5K or one 5K and a 10K in the winter, something like that. And other than that, and some shorter efforts, like the 5 minute effort you might have from a VO2 max session that you do on the track, but you wouldn't really know about your 1 hour speed and or anything beyond that. So for running, what I do instead of using the speed duration curve is typically to base it off of your 5K pace, your 10K pace, your half marathon pace, and your marathon pace, but without actually having to run all of those distances. So what I suggest here for running is that you try to do 2 races of different distances. And typically this would be a 5K and a 10K, but it could also be a 5K and a half marathon or a 10K and a half marathon. Or even if you, for some reason, have run a marathon, then it could be the marathon and another time. The longer you go, though, the less accurate it becomes, because the more likely it is that you had some sort of failure moment that led you to not perform to your potential in the race. So a 5K and a 10K is, in my opinion, the best option. And then you can get the representative times or paces for the other distances. So what you can do here is the following. You open up ChatGPT and you write, quote, "My 5K time is X and my 10K time is Y. Please calculate my Regal exponent and then use the Regal formula to estimate my half marathon and marathon times," end quote. Regal here is R-I-E-G-E-L. And as a side note, there's a lot of talk about how to use AI in training and coaching. This to me is a perfect example of how I think it makes sense to use it. I spend a lot less time building Excel spreadsheets or WKO expressions these days, and I can get a lot of this kind of data from AI platforms doing this kind of laborious work for me instead. But things like the example we had before with a single outlier 5 minute mean max power done outdoors, where most of your training is indoors, that's an example of where an automated training platform would fail and where the value of a coach or your own education and knowledge as a self-coached athlete comes into things. Because I'm quite certain that no platform would take that context into account. They would take that 5 minute power and use it as your automatic critical power or automatic FTP or what have you. And you would be training to that even though that power came from an outdoor outlier rather than your typical indoor training setup. And you wouldn't be able to replicate that level of performance indoors in your normal day-to-day training environment. But anyway, that was a side note. Let's get back on track. So basically, you plug that that question into ChatGPT, that prompt, and you would get the corresponding times and paces for your half marathon and marathon in the example where you already ran a 5K and a 10K. This method of using the Regal formula, calculating a Regal exponent by doing two races of different distances, it may sound awfully similar to doing a critical speed test, but it is in fact not. A critical speed test to be valid must have all the tests done in the severe intensity domain. So in practice, to be sure that what we're doing is in the severe domain, the longest test should be at most 20 minutes. And in the literature, you would see configurations like doing 3 minutes, 6 minutes, and 12 minutes, or 2, 4, 8, and 15 minutes, configurations like that. The Regal formula, its normal use case is to take one race distance and use that to estimate your time over a second race distance in running, using that known time over the first distance based on empirical data. So you don't do two tests. And this is how calculators like the Macmillan calculator online and the Jack Daniels VDOT calculator, how they normally function. And they use a standard Regal exponent, I think 1.07, maybe 1.06. But I'm not going to, I don't know exactly, can't speak to that. But basically, it involves estimating the decay rate based on an average group decay rate of how much slower you are over one distance compared to the next. There is obviously individual variations here, and that's exactly what we're trying to avoid. Here we're trying to avoid fitting your individualized intensity targets around group averages. So that is why we're taking two different race results and we're calculating your own Regal exponent using your decay rate from those two races, and then you have your individualized Regal formula so that you can estimate what you would do with the same fitness in the other distances. And this way you can have specific for you paces. This is my 5K pace, 10K pace, half marathon pace, and marathon pace, even though you only ran the 5K and the 10K. This might all sound very confusing, but to be honest, it's not all that important that you understand the background. What's important is that in this way, you can just use two races, ideally two shorter races, but they have to be of different distances, and this will give you an accurate enough idea of your paces over different distances. And this way, you can have a performance profile for running that you can use when it comes to setting intensity targets for running. Okay, that is another section of this podcast finished, and we're basically coming up on the last section before some conclusions, short conclusions. And this is where the rubber meets the road, and we use the performance profile to set intensity targets for different types of workouts. First of all, we should remember that we will use this process as a starting point, but then as we go through the training process and we actually do workouts, this will also inform adjustments that we make to our future workouts. For example, if you do a VO2 max workout of 5x4 minutes at 95% of your 5-minute power, you do that a couple of times, and the second time it felt a bit easier than the first, and you had a bit more left in the tank at the end, then maybe that is already a sign that if you have planned to do the same workout again a third time, then you can simply add 5 or 10 watts to the previous target. So at this point, you no longer need to think about percentages, but you can think about realistic watt increases in absolute watts from the last time you did the workout. If we're talking about another type of workout, like threshold workouts or race-based workouts, the tendency would normally be to progress by extending time in zone rather than by intensifying. So there, things work a bit differently. But nevertheless, you still need to assess when you first do a workout like a threshold workout that the intensity targets that you set were on point, because no rule of thumb, no method is foolproof and 100% correct 100% of the time. So you still have to be engaged in your own training process. And if you feel that something is wrong, then you have to have the quality assurance in place to make sure that you correct things. Now, if each workout serves as feedback for the next one, you could argue that this whole process is unnecessary. You can just do 4x20 minutes as a standardized sweet spot workout, for example, and you can just keep adjusting until you feel that it's right. And to be honest, this is absolutely correct. Just like you could do a 20-minute test, take 95% of that to be your FTP, take 90% of that to be your sweet spot power, and then do the workout and then adjust from there. You could do this and you might in the end get up, end up at the exact same point. And I think especially when you get to close to threshold, so that sweet spot to threshold range, it's kind of easy to feel when you're below threshold versus when you're above it, at least if you have a decent amount of experience and you understand the physiology of the different intensity domains. I would say you might have actually bigger benefits, potentially, farther away from threshold on both ends, both for the higher intensities, so for VO2 max workouts, where there is a much larger individual variability in how different people perform VO2 max levels optimized for them, simply based on, or at least a main contributor to the difference will be differences in glycolysis and glycolytic contribution to energy production. And on the other end of the spectrum, at longer durations, so 7.3 pace, Ironman pace, marathon pace, durability really comes into play, and that needs to be taken into account. And a lot of people tend to do these workouts too fast, and it's not corresponding to their current level of durability. But so they end up not accumulating enough total distance or total duration at these intensities. So while yes, you should adjust future workouts based on your past workouts, if you have hit a plateau, and this is the reason that you're looking to maybe individualize your intensities, it might also be worth it to just try to set target intensities in the way we're talking about here, and maybe not adjust too much based on feel. Because actually for some people, there is a need to recalibrate feel, at least around certain intensities. So this might be one of the keys to unlocking moving away from that plateau and start progressing again, if that is the case. So always use any workout to inform where you are in your training process and potentially adjust the future. But also don't necessarily assume that you know exactly that you're doing the intensities at the right level and that the feel is what you think it should be, because it might not be the case. But the human body is a bit complex. So there's an argument for both sides, basically, and you need to find where you fall on that spectrum. The final general point here, before we get into the specifics, is to always give yourself a range of power and speed. So for example, a 15-watt wide range of power, or a 10-second per kilometer or 15-second per mile wide range of speeds or paces for running workouts. And now when we talk about setting the specific intensity targets, even if I just talk about one specific power number or pace number, it is implicitly assumed here that you use a bit of a range. So for example, the power or pace mentioned would be in the middle of a range that is 10 seconds per kilometer wide or 15 watts wide, for example. So let's now finally get to that point of establishing these intensity targets based on your performance profile. So if we start with VO2 max intervals, if we're doing short versions of VO2 max intervals, that would mean sessions like 30-15s, 40-20s, etc., and those being 30 seconds on, 15 seconds off, 40 seconds on, 20 seconds off. Also intervals like, well, 60 up to 60-second intervals potentially with 30 to 60-second rests, then you can probably use your 5-minute power as your target intensity. If you do intervals that are 3 to 4 minutes long, then typically you would do something like 6 times 3 minutes or 5 times 4 minutes, things like that, then around 95% of your 5-minute power would be appropriate. And for anything shorter or longer, let's say 2-minute intervals on the shorter side or 5 to 6-minute intervals on the longer side, then just add or remove 2 to 3 percentage units. So 97 to 98% if you go to 2-minute intervals, or 92 to 93% if you go to 5 to 6-minute intervals, and all anchored in that 5-minute mean max power. For running, I would basically anchor VO2 max intervals around doing 4-minute intervals at your 5K pace. Again, it might be a typical 5 times 4 minute workout. Every minute shorter or longer that your interval duration is, you can basically aim to run 2 to 3 seconds per kilometer or 3 to 5 seconds per mile quicker or slower. So if you go from 4-minute intervals to 3-minute intervals, then you could go 2 to 3 seconds per kilometer faster than your 5K pace, or 3 to 5 seconds per mile faster than your 5K pace, because you took one, you're doing intervals that are 1 minute shorter in duration than that kind of anchor point of 4 minute intervals. What about threshold intervals then? Well, threshold really is a range, as we talked about. One could even argue that there isn't really a true threshold. And to be honest, I kind of agree with that argument. But I still think that from a practical point of view, it makes sense to discuss it as such, because it is just such an ingrained part of our training and coaching nomenclature that it's hard not to. And so here you would basically look at those power and pace numbers for 30 and 60 minutes as your threshold range. And your 60-minute mean max power might be more like what you would normally call sweet spot. But in all likelihood, in a lactate test, that will probably be your LT2, or in an MLSS test, that might be your MLSS. Your 30-minute mean max power would be somewhere around your critical power typically. So this is the way that I would look at things. And then how to use this range. Basically, the more you fall towards the fast twitch end of the spectrum in terms of your physiological profile, the more I would steer the intervals towards the lower end of that intensity spectrum. And the more of a diesel you are, the more you could safely work close to that upper end. Most somewhat experienced athletes could probably work somewhere in the middle. You can also consider this from a periodization point of view, even if you are somewhere in the middle. So you might, if you're working on your physiology, you might start by doing longer intervals at the lower end of the intensity and working towards shorter intervals at that higher end of that intensity range. And this might work well and is very classic linear periodization. If you have a race at a longer distance, let's say you have a 7.3 coming up, then you might actually want to reverse periodize things. So you might start with those shorter intervals at the upper end of the threshold range, and then you work your way towards longer intervals at the lower end, which would mean that you're moving from less specific to more specific as you get closer to your race. The key advantage here is that instead of having a single FTP that you have to hit, which, by the way, would pretty much represent that top end, or very close to the top end of your range anyway. This makes you aware of your threshold as a range, and you can build workouts and execute them adequately within this range. And basically, you have that 30 to 60 minute mean max power range to work with if we're talking about the bike. For running, if you are a faster runner, let's say you do a half marathon in 1 hour and 20 minutes or faster, then your threshold range would basically be your 10K pace to your half marathon pace. If you do a half marathon in 2 hours or slower, then your threshold pace would be your 5K pace to your 10K pace. And if you're somewhere in between, then you can basically split the difference. So that's how I would look at it. And then you would obviously decide again. You have an upper end, a more intense end of your threshold range, and a lower end of your intense range. And you could do shorter intervals at that upper end and longer intervals and maybe more total duration at the lower end. So again, you have that range and you can use it based on periodization needs, based on physiological profile needs, and so on. In that sense, the exact same things that I already talked about with regard to biking applies. It's just about how you actually find those target intensities. And that relates a little bit to how fast you are, because it's more about the duration than the distance. So this is why, if you're doing a half marathon in 2 hours, then you might be doing a 10K in 1 hour. So that 10K might be more of the lower end of your threshold range, and the 5K the upper end or more intense end, let's say. And that would correspond kind of the same way to a faster runner doing a 10K and a half marathon. So it's just about finding the durations really that correspond to the race distances. Finally, race pace intervals for events where the race pace is slower than your threshold range. So in a triathlon context, we're talking about 7.3 and Ironman distance, potentially Olympic distance, that depends a bit on your speed. Let's start with running. For well-trained athletes, I think a good goal, which might not be achievable for you in one race build, but over a couple of years, it should be achievable, is to run your triathlon race pace as you're the same pace as one distance shorter in a one distance longer in a pure running race. So basically, if you're doing an Olympic distance triathlon, you would be doing that at the same pace as you would do a pure half marathon in a running race. In a 70.3, you would have your run pace be similar to your marathon pace in a pure running race. For the Ironman, of course, there isn't one of the standard distances that you can compare to. So I would add 20 seconds per kilometer or 30 seconds per mile to your 70.3 pace as a stretch goal. For most people, that would be very hard, and I wouldn't count on that, but I would train to that target and then potentially actually run a bit slower on race day, or intentionally, I mean, pace, go out a bit slower on race day, and even potentially pick it up a bit later when you feel, when you realize that you feel really good. But be a bit conservative with that, because that is very much a stretch goal target for most age group athletes. If you are a reasonably experienced and well-trained athlete and you consistently fail to get to these marks, or at least close to these marks on your run off the bike, and maybe not so much for the Ironman distance, but for the 70.3 distance and shorter, then I think that this is an indication that you should look at your pacing on the swim and bike. You should look at your nutrition, hydration, and your durability, because generally speaking, this is achievable to run off the bike at the same pace that you do in one distance longer in a pure running race. For cycling, the limitation we have is that we usually don't have as much near maximal data over these longer durations. So that is a limitation that we need to consider. And one option is that you could look at 2 full years of data to get more certainty into your performance over these longer durations. If your performance has been quite stable over more than 1 year, that is an option. You could also be okay with just looking at your top one, maybe top two mean max powers over these long durations, as long as you, of course, confirm that those power files are valid and aligned with your context. Another option is that because we are anyway at relatively low intensities, usually at the low end of the heavy intensity domain or even in the moderate domain, you could take your race duration. Let's say you're targeting a 5-hour Ironman bike and that is realistic for you. You could use the power associated with a duration that is 20 to 25% shorter to target for Ironman specific rides, but then you would analyze that duration just like the normal way that we discussed before, looking at your top five and making sure that it's pretty consistent. But in that case, if you take something that is 20 to 25% shorter than a 5-hour Ironman bike split, you would be looking at your mean max powers over 3 hours and 45 minutes to 4 hours and take that as your Ironman power that you're training to. And then for race day, your training determines race day. This analysis does not necessarily, it can be part of your race day strategy, but what you do in training definitely is the big contributor to your race day plan. So if you have then managed to do like proper Ironman specific rides at that power in training, then that might be very realistic for racing. But anyway, that is an option that I like to use actually to get more good data, to take 20 to 25% shorter durations than those really long durations. For a 2-hour, 30-minute half Ironman bike leg, you would look at your powers associated with 1 hour and 52 minutes to 2 hours. That is 20 to 25% shorter. That is, it means that it's 80 to 75% of the original duration. And that is basically there are a few options there, and you can choose whichever seems to work best for you based on the data that you have available. And again, this comes a bit down to the art of coaching and your own experience, your own context. So it maybe takes some getting used to and some tweaking, some experimenting to figure out. But these are the options that I would look at for the longer intervals when it comes to the cycling component. Now, there are a few other types of workouts, of course, that you may be doing regularly that I won't cover, because I think they are all more or less encompassed by the intensities that we have discussed. So number one, we have quote-unquote tempo work in the cycling rather than the running vernacular. So zone three in a 5-zone or 6-zone system, that is basically very similar to your 7.3 specific intensities. So that is covered. Your quote-unquote LT1 or zone 2 work would be quite similar to your Ironman specific intensity. And your sweet spot, we have mentioned many times, that is the low, maybe up to the middle end of the threshold range. So it is in there. And now, some remarks on swimming, which we haven't discussed, as I talked about at the beginning. I think this doesn't necessarily apply so well to swimming. For swimming, I still think that there is some value in anchoring VO2 max intervals in a 400-meter or 400-yard time trial, and threshold intervals in a 1,000 to 2,000 meter or yard time trial. It can be useful, and these time trials are easy to do. They are simple to do, not easy, or is it the other way around? They come at a low physiological cost, maybe a higher psychological cost, potentially, depending on how you feel about that. So that is a potential. It's not something that I'm really adamant about, is that it's absolutely necessary or super important. But that can be useful. However, the main point here is that swimming is so technical, and most athletes also don't have pacing feedback while actually swimming, only between intervals. So I think it's less useful to have pace targets in swimming or intensity targets in swimming than it is to have not intensity targets, but pace targets, certainly. Because having a pace target can be detrimental if it makes you fight the water instead of focusing on swimming well at the right effort. It is 100% useful to have a notion of those reference points. For example, how do your 50-meter intervals compare to your 400-meter time trial, or 100-meter intervals, how do they compare to your 400-meter time trial? How do your threshold 300s compare to your 1,500-meter time trial? That is very useful, and to be able to identify if the workout stood out in some way as faster or slower than expected based on those sort of time trial data. But I would more often than not have a target pace for swim workouts, but just prescribe swim workouts based on RPE. And for sure, use pace while you're in the workout to check between your at each interval how fast you're swimming, because this is also the way that you are engaged in your process. You can notice that this small technique change that you just made, it actually made you swim 1 to 2 seconds quicker for the same RPE, and you also know exactly where you normally should be for different RPEs when you always do that, when you always get that feedback between intervals. But again, these are the reasons that the main reasons that I don't really prescribe paces so much as RPE as the input. And then for sure, the pace is super important to have and to analyze as the output. So that's why I wouldn't really use this methodology for swimming, or I wouldn't, period. Then some other final remarks, some general conclusions and takeaways, I guess, is that this is not meant to be an episode that makes you replace one way of formulaic thinking with another way of formulaic thinking. I think this methodology that I described might help you get a better starting point when it comes to setting target intensities, and you'll potentially avoid some wasted time, at least if you are somebody who is farther from the middle of the bell curve in terms of either physiological profile or performance profile. That being said, you shouldn't use any kind of rules of thumb that I have used here as gospel. There is a lot of art of coaching in here, and if you're self-coached, you need to be engaged in your own self-coaching process to figure out exactly how you can best use this method for you. And never forget to think deeply about context. Context is king. But to summarize in a structured way with a few key takeaways here from this episode, the first one is that a classic percentage of threshold approach as intensity targets works well, or very well, for the majority of athletes. So you don't have to overcomplicate things if you don't feel you have a problem, and if you are continuing to improve. See this as an alternative methodology that you can consider if you've hit a plateau or you have run into issues like overtraining or similar. The second main takeaway is that to really individualize and optimize your intensities, it is essential to use multiple anchor points. So each anchor point is specific to the intensity you are prescribing, rather than using an anchor point that is not very closely related to the intensity that you're working on. So the perfect example of something that is against something that doesn't work so well is to use a percentage of threshold to do VO2 max workouts. It works on average, but again, when we're talking about optimizing and individualizing, it doesn't work. So that's why we're using 5 minute min max power instead. The third takeaway is to get those anchor points from your quote unquote performance profile, which is what I call a kind of power duration or speed duration curve, where you focus in on a few discrete key durations and the power or speed outputs that you have already showed yourself capable of at those durations. And for the running component, using just two races of different distances, ideally a 5K or a 10K, and the Regal formula with an individualized Regal exponent is my recommended method. And you don't need to understand any of that. You can just ask ChatGPT to do it for you, and that works. The final takeaway is that doing shorter triathlons like sprint and Olympic distances, along with running races of various distances, especially shorter ones, and doing bike races, including virtual bike races, can all be useful for you to get a much clearer and more accurate picture of your performance profile and help you optimize your intensity targeting. This is not to say that you should do this all the time and take a scattergun approach to jumping into races every week and twice on Sunday, but there is a balance between doing 1 to 2 long distance tries a year and that's it, and racing every week and more. And for age group athletes, I actually more commonly see racing not enough as a problem rather than racing too much, although I'm sure that the latter also exists. So that is it. I hope that you have enjoyed this episode. And as always, you can find links to the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com. And I need to remember to put in the power duration curve figure there so you can see what that looks like if you don't know it already. A quick housekeeping item. I was invited to the Endurance Innovation podcast. We did an interview about things like how to assess training interventions, new training interventions, new technology, new metrics, and decide if they make sense, if you should implement it, and how to do that if you do it. And also we talked about things like social media, how to get information from social media, how not to get information from social media, where to get good information, how to do that, a bit of a critical thinking exercise. That it was a very good episode. I really enjoyed those topics, as you probably know. And I recommend that you go and listen to it. I'll link to that in the episode description. It is already out. So when you hear this, it will for sure have been out for a while. And I want to remind you of our training camps in 2025. We have our first camp in Mallorca from the 5th to the 12th of April. And then we have a camp in the Algarve in Portugal from the 26th of April to the 3rd of May. For the Algarve camp, we only have 3 slots left available at the moment of recording. Might be fewer by the time that you hear this, because there is like a little bit of a delay between recording and releasing. So it is best to get your registration in quickly. With either one of these camps, you get to combine your passion for triathlon with experiencing some incredible locations and beautiful scenery, great training facilities, and a fantastic camaraderie with fellow triathletes. Of course, it's also a great opportunity to interact with us coaches and use it as a week to discuss training and learn more about how you might be able to further optimize your own training process. So the benefits you get don't stop at the immediate fitness boost of a big week of training. To learn more, go to scientifictriathlon.com and click through to the training camp pages or follow the links in the episode description. And if you have any questions, please email me on michael@scientifictriathlon.com. And I really hope to see you next spring on one of our camps. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. There are a range of options from drink mix to gels to choose, so you can easily find your personal favorite. Don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS24. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.